Chapter 10 A Man Who Was Uwe, and a House That Uwe Built. A week after his 18th birthday, Uwe passed his driving test, responded to an advertisement, and walked 15 miles to buy his first own car, a blue Saab 93. He sold his dad's old Saab 92 to pay for it. It was only marginally newer, admittedly, and quite a run-down Saab 93 at that. But a man was not a proper man until he had bought his own car, felt Uwe, and so it was. It was a time of change in the country. People moved and found new jobs and bought televisions, and the newspapers started talking about a middle class. Uwe didn't quite know what this was, but he was well aware that he was not a part of it. The middle classes moved into new housing developments with straight walls and carefully trimmed lawns, and it soon grew clear to Uwe that his parental home stood in the way of progress, and if there was anything this middle class was not enamored of, it was whatever stood in the way of progress. Uwe received several letters from the council about what was called the redrawing of municipal boundaries. He didn't quite understand the content of these letters, but he understood that his parental home did not fit among the new-built houses on the street. The council notified him of their intention to force him to sell the land to them so the house could be demolished and another built in its place. Uwe wasn't sure what it was that made him refuse, maybe because he didn't like the tone of that letter from the council, or because the house was all he had left of his family. Whatever the case, he parked his first very own car in the garden that evening and sat in the driver's seat for several hours, gazing at the house. It was, to be blunt, decrepit. His father's specialty had been machines, not building, and Uwe was not much better himself. These days he used only the kitchen and the little room leading off it, while the entire second floor was slowly being turned into a recreational stamping ground for mice. He watched the house from the car as if hoping that it might start repairing itself if he waited patiently enough. It lay exactly on the boundary between two municipal authorities, on a line on the map that would now be moved one way or the other. It was the remnant of an extinguished little village at the edge of the forest, next to the shining residential development into which people wearing suits had now moved with their families. The suits didn't like the lonely youth in the house due for demolition at the end of the street. The children were not allowed to play around Uwe's house. Suits preferred to live in the vicinity of other suits, Uwe had come to understand. He had nothing against that, of course, but they were the ones who had moved into his neighborhood, not the other way around. And so, filled with a kind of strange defiance that made Uwe's heart beat a little faster for the first time in years, he decided not to sell his house to the council. He decided to do the opposite. Repair it. Of course, he had no idea of how to do it. He didn't know a dovetail joint from a pot of potatoes. Realizing that his new working hours left him entirely free in the daytime, he went to a nearby construction site and applied for a job. He imagined this must be the best possible place to learn about building. And he didn't need much sleep anyway. The only thing they could offer him was a laboring job, said the foreman. Uwe took it. So he spent his nights picking up litter on the line heading south out of town. Then, after 3 hours of sleep, he used what time remained to dart up and down the scaffolding, listening to the men in hard hats talking about construction techniques. One day a week he was free, and then he dragged sacks of cement and wooden beams back and forth for 18 hours at a stretch, perspiring and lonely, demolishing and rebuilding the only thing his parents had left him apart from the Saab and his father's wristwatch. Uwe's muscles grew, and he was a fast learner. The foreman at the building site took a liking to the hard-working youth, and one Friday afternoon took Uwe to the pile of discarded planks, made to measure timber that had cracked and was due for burning. "If I happen to look the other way and something you need goes walking, I'll assume you've burned it," said the foreman, and walked off. Once the rumors of his house building had spread among his older colleagues, one or other of them occasionally asked Uwe about it. When he damaged the wall in the living room, a wiry colleague with wonky front teeth, after spending 20 minutes telling Uwe what an idiot he was for not knowing better from the start, taught him how to calculate the load-bearing parameters. When he laid the floor in the kitchen, a more heavy-built colleague with a missing little finger on one hand, after calling him a bonehead 36 times, showed him how to take proper measurements. One afternoon, as he was about to head home at the end of his shift, Uwe found a little toolbox full of used tools by his clothes. It came with a note that simply read, "To the puppy." Slowly, the house took shape, screw by screw and floorboard by floorboard. No one saw it, of course, but there was no need for anyone to see it. A job well done is a reward in its own right, as his father always used to say. He kept out of the way of his neighbors as much as he could. He knew they didn't like him, and he saw no reason to give them further ammunition. The only exception was an elderly man and his wife who lived next door to Uwe. This man was the only one on their whole street who did not wear a tie. Uwe had religiously fed the birds every other day since his father died. He only forgot to do it one morning. When the following morning he came out to compensate for his omission, he almost collided headfirst into the older man by the fence under the bird table. His neighbor gave him an insulted glance. He had bird seed in his hands. They did not say anything to one another. Uwe merely nodded, and the older man gave him a little nod back. Uwe went back into his house, and from that time on made sure he kept to his own days. They never spoke to one another, but one morning when the older man stepped onto his front step, Uwe was painting his fence. And when he was done with that, he also painted the other side of the fence. The older man didn't say anything about it, but when Uwe went past his kitchen window in the evening, they nodded at one another. And the next day, there was a home-baked apple pie on Uwe's front step. Uwe had not eaten homemade apple pie since his mother died. Uwe received more letters from the council. They became increasingly threatening in their tone and displeased that he still hadn't contacted them about the sale of his property. In the end, he started throwing the letters away without even opening them. If they wanted his father's house, they could come here and try to take it, the same way Tom had tried to take that wallet from him all those years ago. A few mornings later, Uwe walked past the neighbor's house and saw the elderly man feeding the birds in the company of a little boy. A grandchild of his, Uwe realized. He watched them surreptitiously through the bedroom window. The way the older man and the boy spoke in low voices with each other, as if they were sharing some great secret, it reminded him of something. That night, he had his supper in the Saab. A few weeks later, Uwe drove home the last nail in his house, and when the sun rose over the horizon, he stood in the garden with his hands shoved into the pockets of his navy trousers, proudly surveying his work. He discovered that he liked houses. Maybe mostly because they were understandable. They could be calculated and drawn on paper. They did not leak if they were made watertight. They did not collapse if they were properly supported. Houses were fair. They gave you what you deserved. Which, unfortunately, was more than one could say about people. And so the days went by. Uwe went to work and came home and had sausages and spuds. He never felt alone, despite his lack of company. Then, one Sunday, as Uwe was moving some planks, a jovial man with a round face and an ill-fitting suit turned up at his gate. The sweat ran from his forehead, and he asked Uwe if there might be a glass of water of the cold variety going spare. Uwe saw no reason to deny him this, and while the man drank it by his gate, some small talk passed between them. Or rather, it was mostly the man with the round face who did the talking. It turned out that he was very interested in houses. Apparently, he was in the midst of doing up his own house in another part of town. And somehow, the man with the round face managed to invite himself into Uwe's kitchen for a cup of coffee. Obviously, Uwe was not used to this kind of pushy behavior, but after an hour-long conversation about house building, he was prepared to admit to himself that it wasn't so unpleasant having a bit of company in the kitchen for a change. Just before the man left, he asked in passing about Uwe's house insurance. Uwe answered candidly that he'd never given it much thought. His father had not been very interested in insurance policies. The jovial man with the round face was filled with consternation, and he explained to Uwe that it would be a veritable catastrophe for him if something happened to the house. After listening carefully to his many admonishments, Uwe felt bound to agree with them. He had never given much thought to it until then, which made him feel rather stupid now. The man then asked if he might use the telephone. Uwe said that would be fine. It turned out that his guest, grateful for a stranger's hospitality on a hot summer's day, had found a way of repaying his kindness. For it transpired that he actually worked for an insurance company and was able to pull some strings to arrange an excellent quotation for Uwe. Uwe was skeptical at first. He asked again about the man's credentials, which he was happy to reiterate. He then spent a considerable amount of time negotiating a better price. "You're a tough businessman," said the man with the round face, with a laugh. Uwe felt surprisingly proud when he heard this. "A tough businessman." The man then glanced at his watch, thanked Uwe, and said he'd best be on his way. As he left, he gave Uwe a piece of paper with his telephone number, and said that he'd very much like to come by another day and have some more coffee and talk some more about house renovation. This was the first time anyone had ever expressed a wish to be Uwe's friend. Uwe paid the man with the round face the full year's premium in cash. They shook hands. The man with the round face never contacted him again. Uwe tried to call him on one occasion, but no one answered. He felt a quick stab of disappointment, but decided not to think about it again. At least when salesmen called from other insurance companies, he was able to say without any bad conscience that he was already insured, and that was something. Uwe continued avoiding his neighbors. He didn't want any problems with them, but unfortunately the problems seemed to have decided to seek out Uwe instead. A few weeks after his house repairs were finished, one of his suited neighbors was burgled. It was the second burglary in the area in a relatively short period. The suits got together early next morning to deliberate on that young rascal in the condemned house, who must have had something to do with it. They knew very well where he'd got the money for all that renovation. In the evening, someone stuck a note under Uwe's door, on which was written, "Clear off if you know what's good for you." The night after that, a stone was thrown through his window. Uwe picked up the stone and changed the glass in the window. He never confronted the suits, saw no purpose in it, but he wasn't going to move either. Early the next morning, he was woken by the smell of smoke. He was out of his bed in an instant. The first thing that came into his head was that whoever had thrown that stone had apparently not finished yet. On his way down the stairs, he instinctively grabbed a hammer. Not that Uwe had ever been a violent man, but you could never be sure, he decided. He was wearing only his underpants when he stepped onto the front veranda. All that lugging of construction materials in the last months had turned Uwe into an impressively muscular young man without him even noticing. His bare upper body and the hammer swinging in his clenched right fist made the group gathered in the street momentarily take their eyes off the fire and instinctively take a step back. And that was when Uwe realized that it was not his house that was burning, but his neighbor's. The suits stood in the street, staring like deer into headlights. The elderly man emerged out of the smoke, his wife leaning on his arm. She was coughing terribly. When the elderly man handed her over to one of the suit's wives and then turned back towards the fire, several of the suits cried out to him, telling him to leave it. "It's too late. Wait for the fire brigade," they roared. The elderly man didn't listen. Burning material fell over the threshold as he tried to step inside into a sea of fire. Uwe stood in the face of the wind by his gate and saw how scattered glowing balls had already set the dry grass alight between his house and the neighbors. For a few long, drawn-out seconds, he evaluated the situation as best he could. The fire would be all over his house in a few minutes if he didn't charge off to get the water hose at once. He saw the elderly man trying to push his way past an overturned bookcase on his way into the house. The suits shouted his name and tried to make him stop, but the elderly man's wife was screaming out another name, their grandchild. Uva rocked on his heels as he watched the embers stealing their way through the grass. In all honesty, he was probably not thinking so much about what he wanted to do, but about what his father would have done. And as soon as that thought had taken root, there was not much choice about it. He muttered, irritated, looking at his house a last time, instinctively calculating to himself how many hours it had taken to build it, and then he ran towards the fire. The house was so filled with thick, sticky smoke that it was like being struck in the face with a shovel. The elderly man struggled to move the fallen bookcase, which was blocking a door. Uva threw it aside as if it were made of paper and cleared a way up the stairs. By the time they emerged into the light of dawn, the elderly man was carrying the boy in his soot-covered arms. Uva had long, bleeding grazes across his chest and arms. The bystanders just ran around, panicking, screaming. The air was pierced by sirens. Uniformed firemen surrounded them. Still wearing only his underpants and with aching lungs, Uva saw the first flames climbing his own house. He charged across the lawn but was immediately stopped by a group of firemen. They were everywhere all of a sudden. Refused to let him through. A man in a white shirt, some sort of chief fireman as Uva understood it, stood before him with his legs wide apart and explained that they couldn't let him try to extinguish the fire in his own house. It was much too dangerous. Unfortunately, the white shirt explained after that, the fire brigade could not put it out either until they had the appropriate permissions from the authorities. It turned out that because Uva's house now lay exactly on the municipal boundary, clearance from the command center was required on the shortwave radio before they could get to work. Permission had to be sought, papers had to be stamped. "Rules are rules," the man in the white shirt explained in a monotone voice when Uva protested. Uva tore himself free and ran in fury towards the water hose, but it was futile. By the time the firemen got the all-clear signal, the house was already engulfed by fire. Uva stood in his garden and watched, helpless and in sorrow, as it burned. When a few hours later he stood in a telephone booth calling the insurance company, he learned that they had never heard of the jovial man with the round face. There was no valid insurance policy on the house. The woman from the insurance company sighed, impatiently explaining that swindlers often went from door to door claiming to be from their company, and that she hoped at least Uva hadn't given him any cash. Uva hung up and clenched his fist in his pocket.